Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Our next interview was done out at the Barrett Junction Cafe. The tape's noisy because it's a bustling place with a lot of people, cowbells on the door every time someone comes in and out. But it's an important interview as we bring you an update on Jerry Fowler, the young man who is now home safely after falling down a well in Potrero several months ago.
This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and the East County Magazine Show, and my guest today is Fel Fowler. Fel's son is his miracle son, Jerry. Many of you may remember the story of Jerry falling down a well, 35 feet down a well in Potrero back in March. And Fel is here with some good news to tell us about his progress and his recovery. Fel, welcome to the show.
Jerry is doing great. He's on permanent disability. He's blind in his right eye. But physically, he's doing fantastic. He's gained over 30 pounds back that he lost during the accident. He went to see the doctor today. He looked over the report and asked him, why is he still alive? He couldn't see a guy who went through as much as he has and still be alive. He is doing fantastic. His attitude is outstanding, and he's my miracle boy. And his wife has taken good care of him, and his son is doing real good. But he is a fantastic boy for falling 35 foot on March the 10th. I just want to say he's alive and he's doing great.
It's had to be just terrifying for you, Fel. Walk us through, if you can, what exactly happened that night and what it was like for you while you were waiting for him to be rescued.
We was pulling a pipe out of the hand-dug well, and we was pulling the last 20-foot piece of pipe, and we were standing on the top deck of the well. It's 5-foot diameter, 4 inches thick of concrete, and it gave away. And I don't remember it, but I grabbed hold of the side, and I seen my son falling down the 35 foot. And for 2.5 hours, I could hear him moaning down below, so I knew he was alive, but I didn't know what kind of shape he was in. And they waited for a special rescue team from Chula Vista to come out to pull him out. And they got him out, and they couldn't tell exactly what's wrong, but he was unconscious. And so on the helicopter on the way in, he passed, and they brought him back. And he was in a coma for 3 weeks, and they induced 2 more weeks, and he came back. But his memory, he did not lose none of his memory prior to the incident or after he came out of the coma. He has a good memory.
Well, we're all so grateful for that. I know we had our reporter Nadine at the scene, and we were all certainly pulling for him and hoping that he would do well. Just to recount the extent of his injuries now, as I understand it, he had broken his breastbone that holds the rib cage together. He had an injury to his spine, a head injury, kinds of other things, because he fell and hit his head on the way down. It's just amazing, and the doctors said that it was a miracle that he was alive.
Yeah, they didn't know the extent of the injuries when he had, and he was losing about a pint every hour on his intestinal organs that got erupted from the impact in the bottom. And he didn't have no broken legs, no broken arms, but his impact was on his spine a little bit and his skull. He had a real bad impact on the right side of the skull, which actually damaged his right eye. But his left eye, which from a childhood, he has 40% sight. If he looks at somebody in the face, he cannot see their face, but he can see all around them. And he can see color. And he's been like that since he's 9 years old. And the doctor done a good job at the hospital and saved him. And they didn't know for about the first 30 hours if he was going to make it or not. But he's doing fine, and he's, like I say, he's been on 30 pounds, walking good, and it's just a miracle that he's alive. And he was a truck driver, and his boss didn't realize what kind of man he had. He hired a guy to take his place, then he hired to hire two more, so he got three guys where there was one guy. And his boss didn't realize what kind of person he had working for him. So he had to give up his Class 1 license. He could haul anything except passengers or hazmat. Now I'm an ex-truck driver, and I rode with him when he had one eye, and he was good as I was. And I got over 1,000,000 miles on the road.
That is hard work, and to have to give that up and be on disability has to be a tough, tough thing to do. Now, how's the family doing? They live out in Potrero, and I understand he has a wife and a 10-year-old son. And how are they doing? What about the medical bills? How is the family coping with this financially, Phil?
Well, had no medical insurance.
Ooh.
He was living on my property, and if I brought somebody from outside to work to help me on the well, the insurance would have covered him. But since he's living on the property and is basically a renter, the insurance wouldn't cover him. And his first month bill is over almost $900,000.
Wow.
And then the state kicked in after the first month because him and his wife, in the first 10 days of the month, they made a couple hundred dollars too much income for the state to cover him. And so they're right now they're on state disability, and they want to turn him over to Social Security. So he's been down to the Social Security office to apply like the state wants him to. So it'll be a couple months before we find out what happens there.
I think this is a real commentary on the state of healthcare in America when we have somebody who's a hardworking guy, worked hard all his life, one bad accident, it's not his fault, and all of a sudden he's got almost $1,000,000 in over $1,000,000 in insurance bills. How on earth do you recover from that? Are there fundraising drives? Is there anything listeners can do to help him?
Well, we had a fundraiser to help him out, some bills and everything else, where the money come in. The community and people, I'm president of the Kiwanis and Patrol, mm-hmm. and the Kiwanis, they all pitched in and sent money. We had donations come from people all over San Diego to help him out. And I sent one reply of his update to everyone I had an address to. And about another month or two, I'll be sending another one to all those people that I do have address on this progress. Because I want to thank all these people for what they donated to somebody they didn't know to help my son. And I just want to thank everybody. Now on the bills, I don't know what they're going to do with the bills. I mean, I'll offer to pay them a dollar a month until it's paid for, but so I don't think I'll be around that long.
Yeah. Is there a fund established? I mean, if some listener out there today wants to help out.
Yes, they can send it to Patrol Community Center Foundation. We started up in Patrol Foundation a couple years ago to help people that comes in a situation like this, but I didn't expect it to hit home. But it's go to Patrol Community Center Foundation in Patrol, California, area code 91963. And you can put in attention Jerry Fowler. Thank you. If you do this, thank you very much from the bottom of our heart.
Very good. We certainly hope some of our listeners can help with that. And Phil, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and we certainly wish you and your son Jerry all the best, and hope he continues to recover.
Thank you.
This is Leon Thompson and
Leah Lansing.
And this is this week's local government report for East County Magazine and KNSJ 89.1 FM. The San Diego City Council voted 7-0 to approve the Castle Rock housing project on the border of Santee and San Diego. The project includes 430 homes. Council also approved annexation by the city of Santee. Opponents testified that the project will worsen traffic, particularly in the event of a wildfire evacuation. Some voiced concerns over environmental impacts and a worsening of odors and air pollution from the nearby landfill. A spokesman for Party Homes, the developer, called the project good stewardship and noted that as mitigation for the loss of open space and habitat, additional land will be purchased for Mission Trails Regional Park. Preserve Wild Santee has said that it may mount a challenge and is seeking donations to fund the effort. A post on the group's Facebook page reads, "If you agree that the 12-party campaign contributions on the same day were an appropriate attempt to purchase Castle Rock approval and wish to support the analysis and potential challenge of the San Diego Council approval, then send a contribution payable to Preserve Wild Santee to fight back. Now that the land has been transferred to the city of Santee, Santee's city council could also weigh in to modify the project."
The City of Lemon Grove seeks to fill a vacancy on its Planning Commission. Interested residents are encouraged to apply before the October 3rd deadline. Applications are available at Lemon Grove City Hall or in the city's website.
And next Wednesday, September 25th, county supervisors will consider a renewable energy work plan for our region. This item was previously postponed due to absence of Supervisor Greg Cox. A key point for discussion will be the possible support for formation of an alternative energy district that would allow consumers to buy power from a publicly owned entity instead of SDG&E. Also on the agenda is a proposal to widen San Vicente Road to improve traffic safety and to underground utilities in this lakeside community. And that's the local government report.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's destination has a variety of choices for Saturday, September 21st, for events to attend. But first, let's start with an event earlier in the week on Thursday. The Highway 94 Club is showcasing local wines at a special tasting event Thursday, September 19th at the Barrett Junction Cafe in Dulzura. Everyone at least 21 years old is invited. Guests can meet the vintners, learn about grape growing and winemaking, and taste some wines. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. and will be held on the back patio of the cafe. The wine tasting is complimentary, with each dinner purchased in the cafe. On Saturday, September 21st, San Diegans countywide are taking it to the streets over rising energy costs on the San Diego Sustainability Tour. Free open house tours of 10 homes, including three in East County, will be conducted from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Presented by the nonprofit San Diego Renewable Energy Society, the free sustainability tour offers citizens the opportunity to see energy improvements and ask questions of solar contractors and energy-efficient experts. Energy efficiency solutions include attic ceiling and insulation, solar-powered attic fans, cool roof solutions, and radiant floor heating. You'll also see power production solutions featuring geothermal heating and cooling, solar electric, solar pool, and solar water heating. Visitors can get energized by the in-home electric vehicle charging systems. And for those curious about how solar works, a live solar PV installation in progress will occur in La Mesa, narrated by the East County Solar Guy, who plans on doing a bit of solar myth-busting throughout the day. There is also a commercial segment of the tour the day before on Friday, September 20th, for those interested in boots-on-the-roof presentations with contractors and other experts. This tour of six money-saving commercial energy solutions begins at 10 a.m. at SDG&E's LEED Platinum Energy Innovation Center. The 11th Annual Kids Care Fest is a free family event held on Saturday, September 21st, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Grossmont Healthcare District and the City of La Mesa have jointly planned the 2013 12th Annual Kids Care Fest at Briarcrest Park in La Mesa. Kids Care Fest, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., is a free family-oriented event open to the public and features free health care screenings for 1,000 children under age 12. Also available at the event will be free medical information from pediatricians, dermatologists, and pharmacists, along with free kids' fingerprinting from the La Mesa Police Department and La Mesa Rotary Club. Free hands-on activities for the kids will include water safety, inflatables, and pony rides. Free parking will be available at Sharp Grossmont Hospital's Briar Patch Campus and Grossmont Medical Arts Building on Center Drive. The SDSU Aztecs are hosting a blackout T-shirt giveaway for the first 300,000 fans, courtesy of Associated Students, on Saturday, September 21st at 4:30 p.m. A blackout is in full effect as the Aztecs welcome the Beavers to town for the first time in 41 years. Ticket purchasing information is on our calendar. Mary James and band will be in concert in Lakeside performing contemporary Christian country music on Saturday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at the Lakeside Community Presbyterian Church. And in Poway at the Poway Rodeo Grounds on Saturday, September 21st again, from 6 to 10 p.m., experience a taste of country in Poway when the Poway Chamber of Commerce hosts this fall event. A Taste of Country is open to the public and is an all-age event that features live music by the Canaan Road Band KSON will also be in attendance to provide music. There will be wine and beer tastings, prizes, and food trucks. The Acumba hikers and walkers are headed to Smuggler's Cave on Saturday, September 21st. Smuggler's Cave is an old hideout for bandits and smugglers that is off I-8 East, just past the San Diego-Imperial County line, in a high desert area near the Mexican border. They'll also hike in through the Valley of the Moon, Elliott Mine, and Blue Angels Peak Monument. This hike is rated hard, with the out-and-back distance at between 7 to 8.6 miles, approximately 4 hours round trip. No dogs, please. Hikers meet at 8 a.m. at the Acumba Lounge on Old Highway 80, Acumba Hot Springs. Join the San Diego County Library in celebrating Hispanic heritage this month with the 8th Annual Spring Valley Library Fiesta. The fiesta will take place at the Spring Valley Library on Saturday, September 21st, from 1 to 4 p.m., offering free entertainment and activities for all ages. Music will be provided by Rondalla de San Diego, the Head Start Youth, La Presa Middle School Jazz Band, and a live DJ. There will be a ballet folklorico competition, an art exhibition by muralist Sal Barajas, and author Daniel Reveles will be talking about his award-winning books. There will be various county and public agencies on hand, plus laser tag, video games, henna tattoos, face painting, health screenings, caricature drawings, lowrider cars, food, and much more. In Alpine, the Kiwanis Club will hold their annual chili cook-off and car show on Saturday, September 21st, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center. In addition to the opportunity to taste an array of chili dishes and vote for your favorite, you can also dance to live music and enjoy other refreshments, including bratwurst, sausage and peppers, ice cream, and a beer garden. A free solar luncheon will be held in La Mesa, where you can learn more about solar technology and rebates. The luncheon will be held Saturday, September 21st at 11 a.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. RSVPs are requested at 1-800-SULLIVAN. On Saturday, a Kids Fun Day will be held at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine from 2 to 6 p.m. The family fun activities include a rock climbing wall, face painting, balloon art, live music, airbrush tattoos, fire safety trailer, and interactive fountain. You can also stay to enjoy a movie in the park at 7 p.m. That's all for this week. These events and more can be found on our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org and our festival and events section. See you around, East County!
Approximately 30 candidates have declared their intentions to run for mayor of San Diego in hopes of filling the vacancy left by Bob Filner's resignation. Councilman Kevin Faulkner is the only prominent Republican to throw his hat in the ring thus far. On the Democratic side of the aisle, Councilman David Alvarez and former Assemblyman Nathan Fletcher are in the race. Former Assemblywoman Lori Saldana has withdrawn from the race to endorse Councilman Alvarez, who represents Barrio Logan and South San Diego neighborhoods. Saldana said he has a strong record of supporting neighborhoods and protecting the environment, and San Diegans can count on him to do the same as mayor. Another prominent Democratic contender has decided to run, former City Attorney Mike Aguirre. KNSJ reporter Nadine Abbott was in San Diego for his announcement.
Returning the city of San Diego to the people of San Diego is the reason I want to be your next mayor. San Diego is a world-class city with world-class residents. We boast top-notch universities, world-renowned hospitals, and businesses engaged in cutting-edge technologies. Our diverse neighborhoods, tireless volunteers, expansive beaches, and incredible weather are attributes that set us apart. The events of the last few months provide San Diego with a historic opportunity to a better way to conduct the people's business. Let us propose a new politics for San Diego, one that is not based on endorsements or special interest contributions, private agendas, or the self-interested few. An Aguirre administration will restore integrity to the mayor's office and support policies beneficial to the greatest number of San Diegans. That is what local government should be about. My top priority is to ensure the delivery of vital city services. Adequate roadways and sidewalks, reliable libraries and recreational centers, dependable water and sewer infrastructure, a secure water supply, and a fairer energy rate structure from SDG&E. It is within the people of San Diego that solutions to our common problems will be found. Together, we can build a better San Diego and ensure a prosperous future. Thank you.
Since leaving office, Mike Aguirre has focused on serving as a consumer watchdog of sorts, filing suits on behalf of SDG&E ratepayers and wildfire victims. After the press conference, we asked his plans to help ratepayers if he's elected. There is no reason for San Diego to have among the highest prices in the United States, he noted, adding that the city of San Diego is one of the largest purchasers of electricity from San Diego Gas and Electric. Aguirre proposed that the city join with the county and other cities in the region to negotiate lower rates. He has also pledged to fight SDG&E's proposal to make ratepayers foot the bill for decommissioning San Onofre. An aide to Aguirre said that he is aware of pressures for energy development in East County and aims to hold SDG&E accountable for its actions.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with Miriam Raftery, East County Magazine, and KNSJ Radio, 89.1 FM. And we're talking with Simon Majeski, who's with SanDiego350.org.
Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us a little bit about SanDiego350.org.
So we're a part of the international organization 350.org. We're the San Diego chapter. We've been around since the middle of 2011. 350.org likes to do big international events to draw attention to global climate change. That's what we work on. That's the most important thing that we do. Moving Planet was our first event. Balboa Park, September 2011, we drew 350 San Diegans to march, rally, and listen to speakers, including mayoral candidates and congressional candidates that day.
What does 350 stand for in your name?
So 350 is a number that represents the parts per million of carbon in Earth's atmosphere. And 350 parts per million is a good place to be. We haven't been there for a while. We're at 400 parts per million right now. We get to 450 or 500, things are going to be really bad climatically. It will indicate more heat in the atmosphere, rising of the oceans, lots of nasty things. We're already experiencing extreme weather, hurricanes larger than usual.
Wildfires.
Wildfires here in San Diego. And that's only going to get worse as that number goes up. If we totally stopped using carbon tomorrow, that number is still going to go up because of the way the science works on it.
Now, you have an event coming up this Saturday, I understand, about the Keystone Pipeline. Tell us about the event right here in San Diego.
Keystone Pipeline is a pipeline, a proposed pipeline, parts of which have already been built, that will run from our border with Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, bringing tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, down to our refineries on the Gulf. The pipeline will traverse all of our country that way and is susceptible to leaks. But the biggest problem is if that oil, if those tar sands are converted to oil, that will increase the amount of carbon in our atmosphere. Some scientists suggest 40% of an increase.
Wow.
And that's game over for our climate as far as we're concerned.
In other words, this would be beyond the tipping point, you believe, where climate change would be irreversible.
That's correct. Climate change is already happening, but it doesn't have to be as bad as it may be. And Keystone Pipeline, along with other ways of continuing to use fossil fuels, will only make things worse.
Now, President Obama initially said he was going to sign to allow this to be built, and then more recently he said, well, he won't do that if it's found that it would contribute significantly to climate change, if there's a huge amount of carbon being put into the atmosphere because of the project. So I understand he had the State Department prepare a report.
Tell us what that found and what your dispute is with the results of that.
So the State Department's report indicated in their belief that completing the pipeline and putting it to use would not increase global climate change.
Now, that's a huge difference from the top environmental scientists in the country who say that it could produce irreversible climate change, and the State Department saying it's not going to increase climate change at all. What's your explanation for why there's such a big difference in those findings?
Well, there's probably several different reasons the way that they do a study can differ. But one very interesting point is the person in charge of the State Department study has deep connections to the oil industry. It was an oil industry executive in a previous career. So we think that's interesting. And that study by the State Department has sort of been pushed off on the side now, and more work is being done. So we're hoping that the truth will come out a little bit differently this time.
Where is the pressure coming from to build the pipeline, and why is it so persistent even in Congress today? There's pressure from Canada. There's pressure from Republicans in Congress to build this pipeline as if it's something that we need or something vital. Why is it that there's this pressure to build a pipeline?
So there are some promises being made. There's some promises being made to attract all sorts of different support. One is jobs. The folks who want to build this are claiming that this will create 40,000 new permanent jobs here in this country. There's no way that they're going to be able to create 40,000 permanent jobs. Studies show that during construction, there may be several thousand jobs created to actually build that pipeline. Once that pipeline is built, those jobs go away. They're not permanent jobs.
Could we create jobs like that in a better way that would meet our fuel needs without fueling climate change?
Well, certainly. Solar energy looks to us to be the way to go. It's creating solar panels and installing them. Those are not trivial jobs. They take some training, some skill. They would be the middle-class jobs that our parents and grandparents started out perhaps on the assembly lines. These are that level of job.
So tell us about the event, when and where.
On Saturday, September 21st, we'll begin at 10:30 at the Federal Building, downtown San Diego. We'll have four speakers. We will intersperse the speakers with folks who, individuals, citizens, Americans, who have their reasons why they are against the pipeline. Speaking.
There'll be a lot of people from East County there, I understand. You've got some East County organizers involved in this event.
Many of our leaders are from East County, La Mesa in particular, and we hope to draw a good crowd from East County as well as other parts of San Diego County. We have a North County contingent coming down on the train, hopefully, and we expect 300 or 400 people. The press should be there, and we'll be very happy.
Now, I understand that there is a petition that 75,000 Americans have signed that 350.org has put up at the national level, saying they're actually willing to engage in civil disobedience if the pipeline is approved. Are you going to have any civil disobedience at your rally tomorrow, Simon?
Well, Miriam, this is definitely a non-civil disobedience rally.
So people can just come out and support the cause if they want to. And
that's correct. But we will be talking about the importance of civil disobedience if and when the president looks like he's going to approve this. There will be a discussion. There will be education and training that we'll talk about a bit also. But there will be no civil disobedience. We have filed the appropriate permit. We are working with federal authorities to make sure this rally goes peacefully.
Friday, the Congress voted to defund food stamps, and they threw also in there that they would approve the XL pipeline. And if it's not approved, they're going to shut down the government, basically.
So they put the XL pipeline into the spending bill?
Yes. It's
along with
the
defunding.
Yes, I just
healthcare.
Watched it this morning on C-SPAN, and that's one of the things that they're demanding in order to have a budget. Otherwise, the government's going to close.
What's your reaction to that, Simon?
Well, that's, of course, a lot of bluff and bluster, I believe, of the Republican Party, there is little chance that the Senate is going to go along with that budget. And as we know, luckily, we're in a tripartite government system, and the Senate has to approve a budget, and the president has to sign that budget. I don't think there's a chance that the president is going to sign a budget.
He's already certainly said he would veto it if it has defunding of health care, but what's not clear is what happens next, if we're going to go into a fiscal crisis over that and see the nation default on its debt, or whether the Republicans will cave and come up with something that's a little bit more moderate. If people want to get more information about the Keystone Pipeline issues from your point of view in the rally tomorrow, or they want to learn more about the 350.org organization, they can go to sandiego350.org. I understand there's a lot of information up there.
Exactly. And we'll see you all on Saturday, I hope.
Well, we hope to be there, and we appreciate you coming in and sharing this important information with our listeners on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Simon.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Environmental groups are calling on the governor to declare a moratorium on hydraulic fracturing, better known as fracking. That's after a watered-down version of SB 4, a bill to regulate fracking, passed the legislature. The Natural Resources Defense Council, Clean Water Action, and California League of Conservation Voters say that the bill contains dangerous amendments that undermine both critical safeguards to protect Californians from the dangers of fracking, as well as state environmental review processes. A moratorium on fracking was removed from the bill. The revised version merely requires reporting of chemicals in fracking fluids, but would allow fracking to continue. Fracking requires injecting water, sand, and chemicals into deep rock formations to release oil or natural gas. Serious questions have been raised about contamination of millions of gallons of water, a commodity in scarce supply already in California. In some communities, fracking has also led to problems such as tap water so laden with chemicals that the water has burst into flames. Fracking has also been linked to earthquakes in areas that never had seismic activity in the past. The industry contends the practice is safe and has opposed regulation. The environmental organizations are urging Governor Brown to use his authority to immediately impose a moratorium on fracking in the state in order to fully assess the health and environmental threats posed by the practice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health update from the County of San Diego. The county is asking campers and hikers to take steps to protect themselves after three ground squirrels near Palomar Mountains tested positive for plague. County Vector Control Program officials say it's not unusual to find plague in San Diego County. It's a bacterial disease of rodents, but it can be transmitted to people if they come in contact with infected animals or their fleas. People who contract the disease can become very sick or even die unless they're treated quickly with antibiotics. The county's vector control program routinely monitors flea populations at campgrounds and takes measures to reduce the fleas when disease is found. These three squirrels that tested positive were trapped in routine traps last week in the Cedar Grove campground near Palomar Mountain. People who visit or stay in rural mountain areas should look for plague warning signs and follow these precautions to be sure you don't come in contact with plague-carrying fleas. Avoid contact with ground squirrels, chipmunks, and other wild animals. Do not feed, touch, or handle wild animals. Don't rest, camp, or sleep near animal burrows in the ground. Never touch sick or dead animals. Protect your pets by keeping them on a leash. Use flea control or leave your pets at home. Report dead squirrels to rangers. Contact your doctor immediately if you become sick within a week of visiting an area known to have plague. Symptoms include a sudden onset of fever, chills, and tender swollen lymph nodes. For more information about plague surveillance, call the Vector Control Program at area code 858-694-2888 or visit www.sdvector.com. That's sdvector.com.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
Job Talks on KNSJ's East County Magazine show is supported by our listeners and by the nonprofit San Diego Building Trades Family Housing Corporation, building our future.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here on Job Talks today with Mary England, the president of the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Mary, to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Now, the Chamber represents businesses in La Mesa from the small proprietorships to the large corporations and banks. What kind of outreach does the Chamber do with the City of La Mesa on economic development?
Economic development has a different meaning for everybody, but basically most people come to La Mesa want business friendly, and that means something to everyone too.
Mm-hmm. And is La Mesa a business friendly community in general?
I believe so, and I think we have some great opportunity to expand that always. We're always looking to expand it. Mm-hmm. I think the streetscape plan that's coming up, the multi-million-dollar project on La Mesa in the Village, is going to be a great one.
Now,
I think,
what is that going to include? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, they're going to work night and day. They're going to have new sidewalks. They're going to underground. There's just going to be a lot of improvements.
So the utilities will be below ground?
That's what they're talking about, I hope. Again, you know, the plan is different. They're going to be working at night. It's going to be a long project.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the traffic will be impacted, and there will be signs up there. All of the stakeholders in the Village have been informed, gone to lots of meetings.
Mm-hmm. Of course, La Mesa, we should add, just celebrated its centennial celebration, so it's really getting a facelift. Second 100 years.
Yes, everyone's very excited down there. And, of course, there's always growing pains with those things, Miriam. So it doesn't just happen overnight.
That's true. We saw that, in Alpine when they were
exactly,
undergrounding.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think that if we're looking at some portions of the area to be redeveloped, the vacant police site is a great opportunity for building from the ground up.
Now, what are some of the options being talked about? And if you could wave your magic wand, Mary, what would you like to see built there?
Well, I don't know what's talked about. I'd love to see some retail there. I mm-hmm. think it'd be a great, the synergy there. It's not far from the trolley. Mm-hmm. It's also not far from the Village.
And that could certainly bring more jobs into the Mesa.
Oh, it definitely will. Even if it was retail, people need trained salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Also, maybe a large restaurant there. Just one thing there on that parcel
that
could bring jobs.
La Mesa is really getting some nice restaurants coming in recently. I understand Cone Restaurants is getting ready to open something right in the heart of downtown.
Yes, they're looking. They're in the middle. I was there yesterday looking at the remodel, and they just announced Roger Moore mm-hmm. is going to be their young chef, a young man that has come up through the ranks, so it should be very exciting.
From Verona, I understand.
Yes. He's going to infuse some of his traits along with what the La Mesa people, their palate wants.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a great marriage.
Do you expect that'll bring some people maybe from outside La Mesa to find the Village and come in and discover it here?
Well, Miriam, yes. We're very excited. The Cohens have a great reputation. To answer your question, I believe absolutely. Will people come to La Mesa to try the new restaurant? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no reason not to. Cohen have a very high standard, mm-hmm. deliver a great product, and are consistent.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to be open before Oktoberfest.
Oh, that's nice timing.
Yep.
Speaking of Oktoberfest, tell us about the event which the Chamber is involved in helping to organize each year and how much that brings into the local economy, how many people.
We close down the city. Not too many cities do that.
Mm-hmm.
We reroute the buses and trolleys to accommodate over 200,000 people.
200,000. So this is really one of the biggest events in East County, along with the Mother Goose Parade, correct?
Probably in the region, and some people say it's the largest Oktoberfest this side of the Mississippi.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment.
We hire a lot of young people. I have 36 young people every year from San Diego State ROTC.
Very good.
That come and help me with traffic control. They're very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I have 8 to 10 young people that follow me and come with us. We hire, obviously, we promote a lot of the local businesses and those that provide K-rail, fencing, all the things, electricity. We have a local electrician.
Sure,
security. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we do help the economy through this weekend event.
Very good.
Not unlike the Del Mar Fair.
And the dates of it this year are October...
Friday, October 4th, Saturday the 5th, and the 6th. And we have a great lineup. We have 7 live bands this year on our stage.
That sounds like a lot of fun. One of them all the way from Germany.
Yes, very excited about that.
Do you see the business community growing in La Mesa? And what are some of the industries that you envision for the future?
Well, Miriam, I don't see it growing to a great degree. Believe it or not, we don't have a lot of vacant storefronts.
Mm-hmm.
However, businesses come and go, and I believe our growth will be if some larger projects come to fruition, such as Park Station.
Which is the high-rise mixed-use development right. that's planned over near Baltimore Drive.
Right. That's a large project. If that ever happened, there would be some improvement in our job market. Also, Walmart, the new Walmart marketplace I was thinking of, has improved our job employment.
Now, what about the future of Grossmont Center? Are there some possibilities that when the lease comes up and they possibly change the type of use or expand?
That's a great possibility. I think the market will drive that, as well as if there's going to be building, what the cost per square foot would be to build, and is it a mixed use or is it total retail?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting to see what happens over there. Now, what are the needs of the business community to expand their operations in La Mesa? And does La Mesa have the resources that existing and new businesses need to create new jobs?
Business expansion is different to so many people. Increased sales, obviously, if a business increases sales, that pulls the trigger that they're going to need to decide to expand. Or they're going to add a new product, such as San Pasqual Winery. Mm-hmm. They were having their tasting. They were doing their winery in another part of the city. Now the ordinance has changed, and they're going to have their winery over on Center Street. So a lot of changes.
Right, which was really a very industrial area for a long time, and it's an interesting location for a winery. What else might be coming into that part of La Mesa?
Well, I'm meeting with a man that is going to start a brewery.
Oh.
And I haven't met him yet, but it looks like we're going to have a brewery in the same area because it's zoned for that.
Interesting, because San Diego is the craft brewing capital of the nation now, according to some of the beer magazines I've
yes.
read up on that. That started in San Diego now. It's interesting to see them beginning to make their way out to East County.
It's similar to the wineries, Miriam, because you know the wineries out in East County and the region are really taking off.
Exploding.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the zoning out there, now that they can have tasting rooms, that ordinance was changed by the county, so now they can have the tasting rooms. They went through a 1 or 2 year process to change that ordinance.
Correct. And I just interviewed Diane Jacobs, Supervisor Jacob, and she indicated they may be looking at the same thing, perhaps for craft brewing in the near future.
And I'd love that. She did look at it, and it was voted upon, I think, the last week, that they're doing that for horses.
Yes, it just
stables.
Passed.
So mm-hmm. I'm very excited. I think that the sky's the limit for us out here in East County.
Well, very good. The Chamber, I might add, also publishes a jobs board on its website. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where you get those from and who that benefits?
Absolutely. We encourage our business members, if they're looking not only to promote their specials and their sales, we want them to promote jobs. So they provide the information to us. We put it on the website, and our website just isn't for chamber members to look at. The public looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that this helps our business members and the economy in the long run.
Very good. What are some of the major employers in La Mesa for those out there that might be looking for jobs?
Well, obviously we have EDCO. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Helix Water District.
Right.
We have Grossmont Healthcare District.
Big. They're one of the largest employers in East County.
They are. And with all of us living longer, Miriam, we all need healthcare.
We do.
So definitely. That's good. Physical therapy is another one. Obviously, our car dealers.
Mm-hmm.
We have some great dealerships. So I think there's anyone looking for a job is welcome to search in East County. We encourage them to look in La Mesa.
Now, La Mesa is getting a facelift, I understand. Tell us a little bit about that.
We couldn't get the facelift prior to the centennial, but there has been a project called the Streetscape Downtown,
mm-hmm.
and that is going to start in January, which will help the village get a facelift.
And that includes
sidewalks, trees,
public
streetscape,
art.
The public art, the legacy project is
yes.
going to be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a $168,000 art project. It's called the Lookout. And that's going to happen before the end of next year. So there's just lots of surprises in the village.
So looking ahead 100 years, we just don't know what's in store for La Mesa, but we're certainly all looking forward to seeing what happens.
Another 100th anniversary. I wish we could be here to celebrate together.
Well, thank you very much. On that note, Mary, I'm going to thank you for being here.
And tell us one more time when the Oktoberfest is coming up for those who may wish to attend. This is a free community event.
October 4th, 5th, and 6th in the village, where we're going to have lots of vendors, great food, and 7 live bands on our stage.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to coming out and doing my part to support the La Mesa economy.
Thank you.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here today with Dana Dunbar, a health insurance agent and broker from Dunbar Health Insurance out in Spring Valley.
She's here to give listeners some information about Covered California, which aims to inform the public about new benefits available under federal health care reforms. As nonprofit media, we're not here to take a stand for or against Obamacare, as these reforms are widely called, but Dana is going to give information for people out there who might not know if they qualify for new coverage or what it's going to cost. California has also enacted its own changes along this line, so in California particularly, there are many new options available. Today, we're going to be talking about how the new laws impact individuals and families, primarily those who don't have coverage through an employer. And in the future, we hope to have Dana back on to talk about the impacts on businesses. Dana, tell us what the enrollment period is for people to apply for these new programs and benefits in California.
The open enrollment period will begin October 1st for coverage that's going to start January 1, 2014, and it'll be a six-month open enrollment period for the first year.
How major are these changes in your view?
This is a huge, huge transformation. There are some major benefits that are being added and requirements of coverage for people who cannot get health insurance because of income or because they have pre-existing conditions right now.
What kind of a difference is this making for the clients that you've worked with?
I am heartbroken on a weekly basis about people who cannot get insurance and because they have a pre-existing condition or they're rated up to a point where it's just an astronomical sum each month or they cannot afford insurance, especially when they have children and they feel responsible for their family and they simply can't afford the premiums.
Can you give us an example of somebody that couldn't get insurance before? I believe you mentioned a case involving a teenage girl.
Right.
And what you were able to do for them with the new healthcare option.
Yes. So this has been the last 2 weeks. I have a client who has a job, but it doesn't cover her daughter, her 16-year-old daughter, the employer program. So she would have to pay $800 a month to get her daughter covered through that group plan. So, of course, she couldn't afford that. And she came to me to get her individual insurance. But because the daughter had a situation in 2011 where she had to go into the hospital for about 5 days because she was having panic attacks, and then she got on medication. They rated her up 400% to $1,100 per month.
And how much will she pay under the new plan?
She will pay under $200 per month under the new plan.
Less than $200 versus $1,100.
That's right.
And she had no coverage at all before.
That's right. She won't be able to have coverage until the new plans begin.
Amazing. Now, how many people in California are going to be eligible for this?
5.3 million people are currently uninsured in California, and those are legal residents. And 1.7 million of those are uninsurable because of a pre-existing condition.
Wow, that's going to help a lot of people then. To be clear, this includes legal immigrants will qualify. If you have a green card, you qualify. Undocumented or illegal immigrants will not.
Correct.
What are some of the biggest changes that it's making in the system?
The uninsurable folks will be able to get insured at a price that they can afford, and then low-income people, people who make less than $45,000 a year as an individual, and that's adjusted gross income, so your taxable income after your expenses and that kind of thing, will be able to get insurance with tax deductions that will make their premiums affordable.
Now, if you're very low income, I understand it could even be free.
Correct, yeah. Under $15,000, just about $15,500 is poverty level, federal poverty level, and those folks would get free coverage.
Mm-hmm. All of the plans also need to include preventive care. What kind of a difference is that going to make?
This is the benefits that they're hoping are going to bring down our health care costs in a huge way. These are specific benefits, particularly for cancer issues, so for men, prostate cancer screenings, for women, mammograms, pap smears, and then also blood work for heart issues and colonoscopies.
So people won't wind up in the emergency ward with that heart attack or stroke or end-stage cancer.
That's right. Yeah, catching things early.
Very important. I understand there are also some caps on how much you could ultimately pay, whatever plan you choose, that should you wind up in a catastrophic situation where you've got a $1 million hospital bill, What happens in those cases?
Yes, there are caps on all of the plans, and that would be for people who make over the 400% poverty level. So $45,000 for an individual would be $6,400 would be their maximum out-of-pocket in any 1 year.
So the most anybody would pay, if you're earning, even if you have a very good income, the most you would have to pay would be $6,500 if you had a catastrophic situation. And of course, for low-income people, it's going to be a lot less than that.
That's correct.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Because right now, the number one reason for bankruptcies in this country or foreclosures is, in the past, it's been medical. People could not afford to keep their house because of a catastrophic illness.
That's right.
Now, in California, let's get down to the nitty-gritty details here. They are rolling out four different plans. All of them are PPOs, not HMOs. So that means you won't have a gatekeeper.
That's right. Well, Kaiser is going to be part of the system, so the Kaiser system has its own particular way of doing things. Mm-hmm. But if you are getting a system outside of Kaiser, like Blue Cross or Blue Shield or Health Net.
So you'll still be able to choose your own doctors.
That's right.
Now, the plans are called Platinum, Gold, Silver, and Bronze. The Bronze is only for young, healthy people who just want catastrophic coverage. The other three plans will cover 70, 80, or even 90% of your total healthcare costs, depending which plan you choose. Starting in 2014, one of the more controversial provisions of Obamacare is that everybody must have healthcare, and the fines can be fairly steep for those who don't. Can you give us an example?
Yeah, it'll start out pretty low to get people mm-hmm. kind of used to this, get them have time to get in the system. So $95 per year per person, per adult for the first year. It goes up to $325 fine for the year number two. And by 2016, it'll be $695 per year. And it'll actually go up from there.
Per person. So
per
if
person.
It's a family, this could
That's
be quite
right.
a bit. But the good news is that there are a lot of subsidies available, and it's not just for those people who are at or near poverty, but a lot of middle-class families will be able to take advantage of the subsidies and get those costs down, you know, quite a bit. Can you give us a couple of examples of what people might expect to actually pay for coverage?
Yeah, I ran some numbers, and a family of four with a 45-year-old primary adult on the plan with a household income of just over $70,000, that is 300% of the poverty level. The unsubsidized premium they would have to pay under this would be $1,187. After the subsidy that they would receive, they would pay $556 per month for the family.
For the entire family.
That's right.
Okay. And the credits are available for people earning up to 400% of the poverty level. The amount will vary.
Correct.
And it actually could be much less than that amount if you're earning less than that.
And just to clarify, those numbers are for the silver plan, mm-hmm. which is the 70-30, 70% what the healthcare company would pay.
Overall, in your experience with having looked at these plans and a lot of actual real-world clients now going through these choices, do you believe that more people are going to be helped by this system than not?
Oh, I absolutely know that this is going to help so many people. The people who can afford health insurance currently are going to be able to continue to afford it, but the people who can't afford it or can't get in because of pre-existing conditions, I'm so excited about it because it's going to be just one inspiring story after another, where right now it's heartbreaking.
Fantastic. What about those who already have some health care? Is it worth it looking around and comparing?
Yeah, I think everybody should take a look and see, you know, run the numbers. What I'm telling my clients is you're in this program now, you've got this premium, but we'll run the numbers for you, get in touch with you, let you know what your options are. There will be, most people will be switching in some way or another.
Now, there's some misconceptions out there. Tell us about what you would consider some of the biggest misconceptions here about these healthcare plans.
That it's going to be complicated. I think that they've done a really good job of making things simple with just the four mm-hmm. plans available. I mean, there's some complexity, and certainly with businesses, it looks pretty challenging so far to figure out how much the premiums would be and everything.
What would you say to those who call it socialized medicine and say they don't want that?
I would say that it is the government coming in to help us in a way that that the government runs the fire department or the police department, mm-hmm. these essential human benefits that we have, I think healthcare is part of that.
But it's more like government
regulating the healthcare industry. It's not a takeover.
Correct.
This is not like Britain, where the government actually, where the doctors and everybody works for the government. These are still going to be private doctors. There are even still private insurance companies involved.
That's right, yes. If people really don't want to be involved in this system, they don't have to be. There are companies that are not part of the Covered California system. Now, the regulation is requiring that nobody can perform underwriting, so nobody can be locked out of the system no matter where you go. But if you go to those companies, then they will not offer tax subsidies.
Mm-hmm. Now, it almost sounds too good to be true. It's better coverage for less money. How are they able to do that? What is the impact on the healthcare insurance industry here?
What they're saying is that these companies are thinking that they're going to have a lot more members. So the 5 million plus people that are going to be getting into the system are going to be the reason that they're able to make money, even though their profits are regulated. There's a huge amount of
people. Tell us about the profit. This is intended to stop price gouging, so
right.
You can't be charged $100 for an aspirin anymore in the hospital. What kind of limits did they impose?
They impose a 15% cap on profits, so you know there's no price gouging involved.
Now, if people want to get help figuring this all out, is there a fee if they want to come use an insurance agent or a broker? And do these brokers handle all of these plans?
Yes, there are. We will have to get licensed under the new Covered California program, and that starts in August. And there is no fee, and that's the case now. There is no extra charge to work through an agent. So
it's not like buying a house and going through a real estate agent. There's no cost.
Yes,
to have an expert go over the options with you.
That's right.
Dana, another question for you. In general, I understand that people who are covered by their employer won't qualify for this. Is there anything out there, any hope out there for people that have coverage they don't like through their employer, if it's high-priced or bare-bones minimal coverage?
They will have to take the coverage through their employer if it is below 9% of their adjusted gross income, if the premium is below that. They will be required to take their coverage. And of course, if their coverage is free, then that's going to make it where they're going to want to take it. But one thing that's interesting is that it's expected that many groups, small businesses, will dissolve their group plans and have people go into the Covered California.
Because they can get better coverage for less money that way.
That's right.
And that will actually save the employers money as well.
That's right. And so they're expecting up to 3 million people that are in group plans now, small groups, will be coming into the system.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. As with everything else, not everyone will come out ahead on this plan. What about those people who are fortunate enough to be earning a higher income?
Well, if they're healthy, then they're going to pay more under the new system. And that's true even with the companies that are not in Covered California, because everyone has to take even unhealthy people. So if folks can get through underwriting and they're at the tier one rate, which is the healthiest rate, right now they really do want to lock in a plan, because that plan would go through 2014, and they will save money if they're healthy and they make over $45,000 and are not going to qualify for subsidies.
And how about those that make over $44,000 but are not healthy? They have some serious condition.
Right now, they are either locked out of the system or they're paying a very high premium anyway because of that pre-existing condition. So they're going to be fine under the new system.
Okay. Where can people go to get more information about this?
Then go to my website and contact me. I really work with people in a personal way. My website is www.dunbarhealthinsurance.com.
Very good. And you can also go a couple more resources. Our website, eastcountymagazine.org. And you can also go to www.coveredca.com, which has a calculator where you can run through your income and learn some more information about your options. And that's also a good resource to pass along to friends who might be in other parts of the state and want to get some information.
Yeah, and I'm working with people throughout the entire state, so I'd love to help folks out.
Very good. Thank you so much for being here, Dana.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering,
Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.